I have an Advent Christmas reading list that I like to get to every year. Some years I'm better at it than others. But on this list is T.S. Eliot's Journey of the Magi. Maybe you've read it. Maybe it's on your reading list for Advent and Christmas. It's a good one. It's a simple poem compared to most of Eliot's works. And the opening lines are, I think, very striking. Listen to this. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of year. For a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter, such a journey. Well, it begins months earlier, doesn't it? With the first bright magazine ads that appear sometime in September or October. On the avenue in White Marsh where I live, or at White Marsh Mall, or up the road, Columbia Town Center. It's very serious business to these people with the year's profit margin dependent on Christmas sales. That's the reality. And the children begin to wish and dream and make lists months ahead. When I was a child growing up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the arrival of the Joseph Horn and Gimbel's department store catalogs used to excite my sister and I to no end. We would sit there and leaf through it, and I like this, I want this, I want that. We were hoping and dreaming of all this good stuff to come at Christmas. Well, the pace quickens around Thanksgiving, doesn't it? Now you can shop on Thanksgiving. That was unheard of years ago. All right, how many of you did some Christmas shopping on Thanksgiving Day? No one wants to admit it. Okay, good for you. And for these past 4 to 5 weeks, most of us have been very busy to accomplish all that we need to accomplish. For some, it can be very oppressive and nerve-wracking. I love the antidote related to me one year by a Sunday school teacher. Her six-year-olds were learning about the ways the church gets ready for Christmas. "We have a special name for the season," she exclaimed. "Does anyone know what we call the 4 weeks before Christmas?" A bright little girl put up her hand and said, I know, it's called Advil." Well, that's not too far from the truth, is it? We do stretch ourselves preparing for Christmas, and now it's here. And all that remains is to hear and to think about the story and the reason why we do all of it. The whole world gets silent to listen again to that wonderful story, to hear the angels again sing the lowing of the cattle, the baby's first cry. It's so exciting. There is something in us, all of us, that wants to be part of that story, to be in that story. You know, Renaissance painters portrayed the Holy Family and the newborn child in the stable in their own town setting, such as Florence. They would paint the family and the child in surroundings that they knew, the familiar buildings, and they would place people that they knew, their families, their friends, their neighbors, in the paintings. Sometimes they painted themselves in these wonderful works of art. And for centuries, people have been creating and recreating the nativity in songs and carols and annual Christmas pageants with a donkey or a camel lumbering down the center of the church aisle. and lots of sheep and shepherds and angels and wise men and lots of singing, Gloria, Gloria in excelsis Deo. A little boy in front of the church was heard to say to his father, who's Gloria? We want to be part of that story. We want to be in that story. It was Francis of Assisi who first created a live nativity in 1223 in a humble outdoor setting, and people loved it. They came from miles around to see it. Art historians are interested in Francis because before he assembled his nativity with a real infant as a baby Jesus, the Christ child in pre-Renaissance paintings of the Nativity is portrayed as a miniature adult, sitting upright, almost regally surveying his kingdom. But Francis reminded his neighbors that Jesus was born like any other baby, and was as weak and helpless and vulnerable and dependent on his mother and father's love as any human infant. People didn't know that back then. Francis taught the world that the essence of Christmas is God came to earth to be with us, to be as vulnerable and as weak as any of us. God came to earth to share and to bless our humanness, all of it, our joys, our sadness, our ecstasy, our disappointment. God came to be with us and to redeem us and to make whole our humanness, our suffering, our victories, our fears, and our deaths. By being here this morning in this Christmas season, you are saying, and I am saying, we want to come close to that story and be part of it. We want to ponder it, to be part of it somehow, to paint ourselves in that wonderful story of Christ's birth. Such a simple story about human life and at its most human. A man and a young woman, she is heavy with child, travel from their home in Nazareth to Bethlehem, a small village near Jerusalem, the ancestral home of the man's family. There is a census, and they have traveled under imperial decree to be registered. It's a long and difficult journey. He walks, and she rides on the donkey. If they happen to find an inn at the end of the day, they will have food and shelter. If not, they will have to stop by the side of the road and sleep under the stars. Finally, they arrive in Bethlehem. The inn is already full. The innkeeper allows them to spend the night out back where the animals are fed. At least they will be warm. During the night, time comes. Labor begins. He helps her. She gives birth to a baby, a son, and together they wrap him in strips of warm cloth they have brought along. They place him in a feed box, a manger, to sleep. It's a beautiful, simple story about human life at its most human. The glory of this story, and the reason countless millions of people around the world want to hear it again and again, is the glory of it. The reason you and I come here this morning is to hear the story about God's love. A God coming into the world. A God revealed in human life. A God living among us. God revealed as he was born and lived and worked and laughed and loved. God revealed in Jesus, who taught us about God's love. God revealed as he reached out to touch the lives of all people, his best friends, their families, lawyers, priests, poor, oppressed, outcast, marginalized. God revealed in Jesus Christ that there are no outsiders. In Jesus Christ, we see a God who loves us unconditionally, who has revealed in Jesus' suffering and death. The Christmas story is about a God who reigns, not from a corner of the universe, but from a stable in Bethlehem. Not from a place, a distance that we can't comprehend, but the story of Christmas is about a God who reigns from a cross on Calvary or sits at a table where bread is broken and wine shared and where all are welcome. That's the story. God comes that close to you and me. And one thing further, a generation after Jesus lived, one of his followers, an elderly man, wrote these words: "In him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Look, there's plenty of darkness. The darkness when we're afraid and worried about our nation and the world and the future. Worried about our young people fighting terrorists who have no regard for human life. There's plenty of darkness. The darkness when you are about to lose your job and nothing's going right and your children haven't turned out that well. And who knows about your grandchildren? There's plenty of darkness. The darkness of sickness and aging. When the report comes back from the doctor that it doesn't look good, there's plenty of darkness. But listen to this. The light shines in the darkness. And the darkness has not overcome the light. The love of God has been born among us. And nothing can or will ever separate us from that love. The light shines in the darkness. And the darkness has not overcome the light. So make a place in your heart for that light. Keep it burning, that wonderful gift of Jesus forever, as Alan taught the children this morning. Make a place in your heart for Jesus today, throughout this Christmas season, and forever.